Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode.
Today, I'm joined by Julie Corwin, the founder of Birdie and Clear, a brand that celebrates timeless, elevated style for women at every stage of life. So welcome to How Fitting, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive in, have this conversation with you. I want to start off with a question about, I know you have a refreshing take on what is age appropriate in fashion. Can you share your take on that term and what it means for Birdie and Clear?
So when we were getting started with Birdie and Clear, we did a lot of customer interviews and surveys. And one of the questions that we kept hearing from the women that we were interviewing was this idea of what is age appropriate when they're shopping. And I would say that our perspective is that there is no such thing as age appropriate fashion. We think that if you love a piece of clothing and feel amazing wearing it, you should definitely go for it. And that there aren't really rules for when it comes to fashion and age, that the key is really feeling comfortable and confident and like yourself is really the most important piece, and that there's not like new style rules that come about as we all age. That being said, we also do acknowledge and want to take into account and think about how bodies do change as we age, and with experiences like menopause and with those changes, I think that there are some really functional and pragmatic design elements that we can make in clothing that address some of those changes and serve to make the clothing feel really good. And so I'll give you a small example. One of the things that came up in some of our interviews was this idea of shoulder stiffness and shoulder mobility can be something that people experience as they get older. And so when we were thinking about the very first two dress styles, we thought a lot about how are you putting this dress on? And is there something from the design perspective that we can maybe adjust slightly so that it's comfortable when you're getting in and out of it? And so one of the changes that we made was just making the zipper ever so slightly longer than we might have otherwise done, so that when you're putting the dress on, you're stepping into it and able to do that instead of like some gymnastics acrobatic to try to like pull it over the head and twist and all the things. So that, again, if you were to look at the style, it doesn't look any different than we would have chosen to design it. But we just made that really minor functional tweak that I think ultimately makes the clothing a little bit more comfortable and again, sort of addresses some of those body changes. So lots more examples like that, but that's just one small example of how we're thinking about that relationship between age and clothing.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I love how it's more about the function than the style. You know, it's age appropriate in terms of let's make this like helpful and supportive for, you know, women who are, you know, a little bit more mature. And yeah, it's like very practical approach, but also like really paying attention and centering these older women in your designs in a way that a lot of fashion does not.
Yeah. And again, like thinking about, we have collaborated with a group based in the UK that does, they provide a lot of research around menopause for brands to help better serve women experiencing menopause. And so, again, like thinking about having an understanding of what are some of those symptoms and how can we think about that in the materials that we're selecting and the silhouettes that we're coming up with. And so those are, yeah, again, just ways that we're really trying to be really mindful so that that comfort piece is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what kind of prompted this focus and really centering older women in your design? Like what's kind of the backstory of how Birdie and Claire got started?
The idea for Birdie and Claire really came from a very personal experience. I was helping my mom and my aunt and my grandmother shop for an outfit to wear for an upcoming wedding. And I was hearing from them that they were just having a really hard time finding what they were looking for that would feel really good for this event. And I thought, they're just not looking in the right places. I'm going to like go online and really quickly solve all their problems and find exactly what they're looking for. That the issue is just, again, like locating the item that they were looking for. And so I got online and started searching. And the more and more that I searched, I realized this lack of pieces that were really designed in a way that felt thoughtful for what they were looking for. And also was really struck by how few brand images reflected on a woman as they aged in just the visual marketing. And so that really got me thinking. Anecdotally, I would chat with friends who were getting married and they would tell me how it was harder to find the mother of the bride dress than it was to find their wedding dress. It really had me thinking, like, why is this? Why? What is making this shopping experience so difficult? And I think what can seem like maybe a kind of trivial problem with clothing is just much deeper. And I think that kind of like discouragement and frustration that we feel when we're shopping, it really takes a lot of time and energy and excitement away from places that we want to be putting that energy. And so that was really the starting point that sparked the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is so interesting. I mean, even kind of remembering back to my wedding, yeah, it was much harder. My mom and my mother-in-law spent so much more time and, you know, worry over their outfits than I did about mine. And it's just wild because, you know, there are plenty of women at every age. And so in kind of your research and conversations, I don't know if you have any answers to this, but like, why do you think fashion has kind of like forgotten about this older generation of women?
Yeah, I so one of the things that we did when we were researching was kind of dive into the more academic research. So found there was a really interesting book written by a professor of sociology that was all about this like cultural relationship between age and fashion and just how we think about that. I also think another piece that that plays into it is just representations historically of women as they age, just in media and culture. Is the Gina Davis Institute for, I guess, Gender and Media is their official name, but they have put out some really interesting research studies on just how women over 50 are represented in film and television and media. And there was one report that we read, it was from I think 2019, where they looked at the representation and found that female over 50 were much less likely than men to be shown as the leads in film. And I think there was some statistic, I'm probably going to mix up the exact numbers, so I won't even try, but the idea that, like, when women over 50 were shown in a lot of these films, so it was not only much less, but when they were shown, it was like wearing pajamas or baggy clothes. And I think all of those subtle messages that we get in culture and anti-aging advertising, I think all of those kind of seep into the attitudes that we all have. And I feel like even since I started working on this, I've seen a shift. And so I think that is really positive, that there is much more visibility and representation that is not kind of relying on like stereotypes and tropes of aging that I think are really outdated. So I'm hopeful for the future, and hoping that we're a very small part in that shift.
Yeah, it's so fascinating that, like, not only, I know you mentioned as we started that you did a lot of customer, like, interviews with different women, but then you also did this more academic research of, like, the cultural view of women as they age and how that relates to clothing and how that relates to how they present themselves in the world. And yeah, so interesting. I'm going to have to look up some of those books and studies you mentioned. There it is a different focus. Like, if you don't consider those different things, and even I've been to a couple events about like AI or 3D and kind of technology in fashion, and several of them have brought up, you know, there still are like age biases even in like 3D avatars. You know, the representation of, you know, your posture and, you know, where you carry weight is not this kind of hourglass, you know, kind of normalized fit, you know, normalized as in like average ideal, or made to look like the average ideal figure, which is not representative of a lot of women, especially as they age. And such a fascinating area of developing clothes to fit women well. Those things need to be taken into consideration more. And so I love that you're doing that with Verdine Claire.
Yeah, it's been, to your point, like, so interesting. And I think everything from, like, who are we picking to test the clothes and the samples, and making sure that having women in our demographic as the fit models. And so that has been something that we've tried to be really conscious of and aware of in throughout that whole development process.
Yeah. So I know you did a lot of customer research when you started. And I know one of the things we've talked about before is how, you know, even as mainstream fashion or media starts to represent older women more, they're still often lumped together as one group. So What did you find when you were doing these customer interviews or surveys about kind of the experience of older women? Like, was there a lot of overlap in the things that they were looking for in clothing, or, you know, their lifestyle and what they kind of wanted at that stage of life? Or was there a lot of diverse experiences that, you know, there wasn't much kind of overlap or common themes from those?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because I do think that it's really important to keep in mind not to lump everyone together in just this age group, because I think there is real diversity in the experience and what women's lives look like. And it's not just age and menopause as the factors that are important to look at it. I think like thinking about a woman over 50, she might be recently retired, an empty nester, maybe a new grandparent, but she also might have kids in middle school or high school, and she might be taking on a new senior leadership promotion at work. She might be newly single and starting to date again. So I think there's a lot of different experiences within that like over 50 age demographic. And so it's important to really keep that in mind and not make sweeping generalizations. I think the common thread that we really saw throughout all of the research that we did was this experience of transition and change and figuring out how the clothing that we're making can work in a lot of those different situations as women are changing and evolving. And I would say the other commonality that we found, again, there might have been some different opinions for specific styles and silhouettes, but at the root, I think everyone that we talked to really wanted high quality materials. They didn't want to spend tons and tons of time trying to shop for pieces. They wanted a really good fit and the versatility to be able to wear the pieces that they were investing in a lot of different settings. So they weren't having to buy clothing all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that versatility, ability to mix and match styles that are going to stand the test of time was really common throughout all of the interviews. Someone said to us, and I can't remember exactly who to attribute this quote to, but this idea of like on trend, but not trendy. So they wanted to look fashionable and have pieces that felt on trend and in style, but they didn't want to be chasing trends and trying to replace clothing all the time. And again, being like really conscious of that piece when it comes to their clothing. So I think those were some of the commonalities that really came up over and over again throughout the customer interviews that we were doing.
Yeah, I think it's so funny that the through line common, the thing that like the constant amongst all the feedback that you got was the change. It says a lot, and it is a theme for sure. And I can totally see that both in the lives of women and I mean even in fashion in general, right? Like trends are always changing, styles are changing, but you're kind of designing for the change in a way that's going to last with change in mind. You're like this static piece. So I think that, like, that's really fascinating to me. So you mentioned that also the versatility of clothing was important to the people you spoke to. I know earlier the moment that prompted the brand, you said, was looking for formal wear for your mom, aunt, and grandma. So were you originally, you know, thinking of starting with formal wear? At what point did that shift to a little bit more? Like, I know you have some pieces that can, you know, be dressed up and worn to a wedding and all of that in your collection now, but you have a lot of pieces that can be worn more for every day. So what kind of shaped the style or the, you know, type of clothing that you offer at Birdie and Claire?
The initial idea was definitely very centered around event wear. We felt like that was, in all the interviews, really the common pain point that we kept hearing over and over again, and that those events were extra important because they're moments where women really want to feel good and feel like they're wearing something special. And so we felt like that was a really good place to start. And the idea was to start with event wear and then down the line expand and offer pieces that were a little bit more casual as well. So I had been planning away and really working on this event wear concept. And I think it was like March 10th, 2020 that I filed for my LLC. So not a great time to be designing pieces for special events and large gatherings.
Yeah.
With that kind of as the backdrop, took a step back and tried to think about what is this assortment and how can we pivot and make it work and incorporate some pieces that are still polished, but maybe could also go a little bit more casual and could be a little bit more dress up or dress down. And so that was the starting point for that pivot. And I think as far as event wear goes, we have a few options right now. And behind the scenes, that is definitely still on my mind and something that I'm hoping to be able to offer some more formal silhouettes in the future.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely a unique time to start a brand in 2020. What was it like as you were developing then your first collection during that time? And I imagine you had to do a lot of things virtually.
Yes, it definitely, I would say, made the process much slower and a lot more virtual over Zoom fittings and things. And I think the one positive in things moving much slower than I had originally intended was that it did give a lot more time to do additional customer interviews and continue to do research and really refine that customer persona. And so I think there was a lot of value in that. I think it also shaped a little bit how I thought about our launch. And so we started as much more of a soft launch and have been just at this like slow and steady pace trying to just little by little grow things. So I think that was really the place where it had the biggest impact.
Gotcha. So like what size of collection did you initially start with then?
Yeah, so we started initially with just two styles. Started with just our first two kind of flagship dresses and then grew from there. And so after the two dresses, introduced the knitwear offerings and then have been experimenting with variations on those first two dress styles. So we last year did like a sleeveless version of our original dress based on customer feedback and just again kind of working to just keep refining and listen mm-hmm. to feedback and we have a few more styles in the works right now that I'm mm-hmm. really excited about. So yeah, just little by little trying to thoughtfully expand the offerings.
Yeah, because I was gonna say you have both the knitwear and the cut and sew, which I feel like is pretty ambitious for, I mean, I guess you're four years into your business now, but to offer that pretty early on, it sounds like they're both totally different production process and different factories. So what was prompted the decision to add the knitwear then? And what was it like kind of managing the production for those two very different types of products?
Yeah, so the rationale behind that, I think with the backdrop of the pandemic, it was really important to me to really think about our supply chain and make sure that it was diversified enough so that if we ran into delays at one manufacturer, it didn't shut down the entire business, so that mm-hmm. we kind of had that diversification. So that was my rationale for wanting to work with two different manufacturing partners. And I've been so grateful because I feel like we really found some really amazing people to work with. The cut and sew part of the business, we did small batch for that production. And I worked with a consultant who helped me manage that process and all the steps going from idea to getting the samples made and the dresses made. And then the knitwear factory that we work with, what I love about what they're doing is they have the capability to do all of the production on demand. So just thinking from like a sustainability perspective, I think not overproducing more than is needed is something that really feels much better to me. And also it's really allowed us to test different styles because we're not having to make like 300 of a style that we don't know if it's going to resonate with customers. So it's been a really great way to test and while still being really mindful of, again, our impact just from a production standpoint. So, So that's been really, really great to work in that on-demand format.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know more and more brands are interested in that, both on the knitwear side and the cut and sew side. And there aren't, I don't know, I don't work in the knitwear, the like fully fashioned knitwear as much. So I don't know if it's more common there, but it's still, there aren't a lot of factories on the cut and sew side that offer that. So that's really cool. How did you meet these partners, especially during, you know, being 2020 that you were working on all of this? How did you find these two places and the consultant that you worked with and ensure that they were a good fit for Birdie and Claire?
It was really challenging. I think that was one of the pieces that, again, took a while to really get into place. A lot of that, finding those partners, was a lot of conversations and like the chain of you'd talk to one person who would recommend someone who'd recommend someone, and then just that web of having a lot of conversations and joining different groups for fashion startups. And I would say, yeah, just having a lot of conversations. And when I connected with the two partners that we ended up working with, it felt like they were just going to be really good collaborators. And the communication was really positive. It felt like a really good working relationship. And so I think that was a big piece of selecting who to work with, because, yeah, you certainly spend a lot of time on calls and communicating with the people that you're working with. And so so it was really important to have that really positive connection for me when making those decisions.
Yeah, I think communication is so key across kind of the whole development production process. It's like the more communicative you can be with kind of everyone along that, you know, that supply chain, the smoother things go. So that's something I always look for as well with, you know, either factories that I'm working with or recommending or really anything else, is what is the communication like?
Yeah. Yeah, so important.
Mm-hmm. So what is your background? Do you have a background in fashion at all? Or how did you kind of get into, you know, wanting to start a fashion business other than kind of the moment that started it? But why was that like particular interest to you?
So around the same time that I had this idea for Birdie and Claire, I was finishing up business school and had studied entrepreneurship, and it was something that I was really interested in. And so it was, I think, the perfect coming together of both of those things happening around the same time, as I was really deep diving and researching the idea for Birdie and Claire as a potential business. I think also coming at it from the business side, I was very aware that the fashion expertise was a gap for me. And so I started taking a lot of classes to try to educate myself in the language of product design and development. I took a pattern making course and a sewing course, and really trying to understand in a really deep way how all the pieces come together. Not because I had any sort of aspiration that I was gonna get enough skills to be able to make the products myself, but to, again, really understand like the implications of different design choices that we were making, and to be able to speak the language and vocabulary that the production partners we were working with were using. And so I think that piece was really helpful in the starting of the brand.
Yeah, I love that you took some sewing and pattern making courses, because I think that does really help the design process when you kind of know the limitations and kind of the options available. It makes those decisions so much easier. I'm curious, what from those classes did you find the most helpful so far?
I think one of the things that was really interesting to learn more about was just how complex the fashion supply chain is. I think that was really eye-opening. I might have mentioned there was a movie that I watched recently called Fashion Reimagined, where it follows a UK designer going through the entire supply chain, from looking at where are the sheep grazing to the final wool product, and just really like understanding each of those steps and the implications was, again, really eye-opening, I think. And then the other piece, just thinking about like the pattern part of things, I think understanding more about how all the pattern pieces get laid out on the fabric, and how that impacts the usage of fabric, I think was really interesting. Like, knowing now in a much more hands-on way, like, why does a dress that's made on the bias use up more fabric? And like going through that process of laying it out and seeing it firsthand was really, really helpful. And I think it also has helped as I look at the different samples that we're making. And so when I'm evaluating the pieces themselves, that's been really useful to be able to look more critically at the different sewing seams and elements in that way. Again, I still have a lot to learn, but definitely was really helpful coming into this at the start.
Yeah, so cool. So earlier you mentioned like sustainability was an important value to Birdie and Claire, and you know, obviously this timeless design. Are there any other values that are important to the brand or to you that you've incorporated as you created new collections for the brand?
I would say the sustainability and manufacturing piece has been something that's really important to me. I think making sure that we're working with manufacturers where there's fair wages and good working environment is really important. I think another piece that I've been thinking a lot about is the carbon footprint in terms of where we're manufacturing and where materials are getting shipped to and from, and thinking about that piece. That was part of what went into our decision to do production based in New York and try to keep it more locally based. And I think that also has trickled into some of the decisions to focus on small batch and this on-demand model of production to really, again, be like very mindful of the impact that the pieces that we're making have. And I guess another piece kind of layered on top of that would also be thinking about the longevity of the products themselves, really making them to to last so that they're not having to be replaced often. And then I would say another piece that I am really looking towards doing more of, I would love to be able to expand our size range and just continue to grow our library of imagery on the website so that we have a really inclusive brand, and people coming to shop at Birdie and Claire can really see themselves reflected in the images that we have on the website.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's, you know, so many things you just said in there, like the ways you're incorporating sustainability with the, you know, more localized production, on-demand, timeless pieces, and the representation too. You know, that's an important piece where it's hard to see ourselves in something if we can't see an example of it. And what you're doing at Birdie and Claire. At this point, so your business is like 4 years old. Kind of what stage do you feel like your business is in at this point?
So it's been really interesting because I feel like it's such a learning curve. And at each stage, there's something new that you're learning and new challenges at every step of the process. So I think initially just getting production going and having a product made was really challenging. I feel like that has been little by little I think we have a good foundation for that piece. And now I'm really turning my attention towards the marketing component. I think just really working to grow the awareness of the brand is a focus right now. The other piece that I'm really focusing on as well is just getting out and about in the world and making more in-person connections. And I think such a highly digital age, having moments where customers can shop in person. So doing more pop-ups and markets is something that I think is really valuable. And so I'm working to make more and more opportunities for that. It's been wonderful to just get out and meet people and get that feedback in person and reactions. And I think just have learned so much from some of those in-person moments. So those are some of the things I have on my plan for the immediate future.
Yeah. And I love the quote on your website, I think it's by Tara Brosh, of paying attention is the most basic and profound expression of love. And so I imagine like you said you learned a lot from doing these kind of in-person pop-ups. Can you share some of those things that you found by really paying attention in those moments?
Yeah, so I think it's, as I think about the start of Birdie and Claire, I think I just hadn't really been paying attention to representations of aging in our culture. And I feel like it was one of those things where once I saw it, I was seeing it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And just really thinking about all the places where I think there are just so many outdated stereotypes of aging, and paying attention to representations where our customer is really confident and vibrant and representative of the strong and stylish women that I have known and looked up to. And I think again, just coming to a lot of those customer interviews with curiosity and continuing to have those conversations throughout as the brand continues to grow has been something that is really important to me, that we're continually listening and getting feedback and testing and figuring out exactly how we can better serve our customer is a big piece of that that focus on paying attention to who we're serving.
Yeah, and it almost, even that, like what you said, almost goes it goes along so well with your brand's kind of whole focus of, let's put these older women who are, you know, traditionally not represented very much, especially by fashion, put them in the center and really value the wisdom that they have. And, you know, as you're paying attention to the feedback and listening, you are kind of, you know, you're taking that as valuable. You're sitting down and you're saying, like, what these women have to say and their experience is worth listening to. And I think that's really, it says a lot, you know, both as a brand and, you know, you as a designer, but in general, like what that says about the value that older women bring to all of us.
Yes, definitely. And I think one of the phrases that we kept hearing over and over was this idea of invisibility. As women get older. And so I think that is really important to me as a brand, that we are really creating a space where aging is represented, and that we're really turning our attention to the wants and needs of a customer who I think has in a lot of cases been overlooked. So that's something that we're really focused on.
Yeah, I love that. So I'm also curious, how does Birdie and Claire support you in the stage of life that you're in right now?
I would say that Birdie and Claire for me has very much been a creative outlet. My favorite part of this whole process has just been all the learning. I feel like at every single step, there is something new to figure out and tackle and learn about. So I think in that way, it's been really fulfilling. I've also kept some work outside of Birdie and Claire just to give me peace of mind financially to have that as well. So I think for me right now, Birdie and Claire is very much this creative outlet that I hope I can just continue to grow and expand.
Yeah, it's so cool. It sounds like, though, like as creative as it is, it sounds like you approach this in a very like problem solving, listening, paying attention to the customer view. Is that kind of an accurate way to, you know, describe how you approach design and this creativity? Like, what aspect, I guess, do you find most creatively fulfilling from running Birdie and Claire?
Yeah, I think I love that problem-solving piece. I had, back in school, taken a course where we had learned about this model of, like, design thinking framework and prototyping. And I think that's been very much the approach that I've taken to the business. And so really, like, thinking about the users, trying to define the problem, testing those assumptions, getting information, pivoting, getting more information, and just like continually refining what we're doing has really been the thought process that I've tried to incorporate into how I'm thinking about our project plans and approach to design.
It's almost like the same through line from your customer research of the, you know, constant change in transitions is also kind of a through line for your business, like with, you know, starting during COVID and kind of changing from formal wear to more casual. And then this very much like test and tweak approach. Yeah, the transitions seem to be the constant.
Yeah, always changing, always learning.
Mm-hmm. That's the fun part, I feel like. So
yeah,
it's like the problem solving, there's always something new to learn. And it's like the deeper you go in the rabbit hole, the more there's to go.
Yeah, some advice that I got right when I was getting started was to look at a brand that has been around a lot longer and is much more established that you admire, and look back at what their very first version was and see how far they've come. And so that's a reminder that I like to give myself sometimes when I'm thinking about my own brand, that like we're in the early days, the phase one, and it's only gonna keep growing and hopefully getting better and better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think is like the biggest piece of wisdom or thing that you've learned in the 4 years so far?
I think the biggest lesson for me and the biggest challenge some days has been patience. Mm-hmm. I would say everything has taken much longer than I initially had planned for. And so just having that patience, I think also keeping in mind that unexpected challenges are going to come up with business. I think like as I was starting to map out Birdie and Claire, a global pandemic was definitely, of all the worries, not on my list of things that I was expecting. And so I think learning to just, with those unanticipated moments, kind of take it one step at a time and just figure out that next step has been, I think, a really, really valuable lesson for me in this whole process.
Yeah, I think the 2020 threw a lot of us a loop, but definitely things to learn from that. And it sounds like you do have kind of a very balanced approach to, you have kind of the long-term goals and you know what you're wanting to accomplish with Birdie and Claire, but yeah, being flexible in the meantime of, okay, what is the next step to get there, you know, amidst whatever is currently going on in the world or, you know, in the business is a smart lesson. So I'm curious, what is a moment that you are most proud of so far in running the brand?
I would say one of the things that has brought me a lot of joy has been some of those in-person moments. I think so much of working on Birdie and Claire feels like me toiling in front of a computer and so I think getting in person and meeting customers, seeing people try on the pieces that, like, you know, like years or months before were just a sketch or an idea in my brain. I think that has felt really fulfilling, just to see that and see people get excited about the last month was at a market and someone got one of our products and was so excited about how they were going to be wearing it on an upcoming trip that they had planned. And so I think just hearing about how women are going to be enjoying these pieces and how they fit into their lives has been really exciting.
Yeah, that's so fulfilling. Those are the best moments, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
I would say a two-part answer to that. I think the first piece that I hope that we can be just bring some joy and feeling good in the clothing. I think not just in how the styles are fitting and feeling, but also for people knowing how the clothes themselves are made. I think the other value that I hope that we're communicating, I have often described the brand as a love letter to the women that I look up to and admire. And so I hope that we're a small part of creating that image of getting older that really is a reflection of, again, those women that I really admire and look up to.
That's so special. And if I'm not mistaken, the name Birdie and Claire is a reference to in honor of, is it your great aunt or your great grandmother's?
So the name Birdie and Claire, Claire was my great grandmother and Birdie is her younger sister. And I just have memories of watching them thrive into their 90s, and they just had such a sweet friendship. And so the name of the brand is Birdie and Claire to kind of honor that friendship and as a nod to them.
Yeah, so cool. Well, this has been a really fun conversation, Julie. Thank you for joining me today. Where can people find out more about you and Birdie and Claire online?
Our website is birdieandclaire.com, and that also has a list of all the places that we'll be popping up in person. And then we're also on Instagram at birdieandclaire.
Okay, wonderful. I'll put links to those in the show notes, and thank you again for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Allison. It was fun talking with you.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.